Today on the Rapsodo Baseball Podcast, we're going to be talking about data analytics. We're going to talk about where it started and where it's going to, and then where it is right now. And today we're going to have Ari Kaplan join us. Ari's been a part of building the Cubs analytics department and has been in the data analytics game for MLB for over 30 years. We're going to have Ari join us and talk through what he's seen, what he's going to see and look for in the future, and then also some of the stuff that BP and I have seen as we've gone through and met with all these organizations. What's up, everybody? We have a pretty big day here for the Rapsodo Baseball Podcast. A couple different reasons. First one, obviously, we're a baseball company, baseball podcast. MLB is back. I don't think we can say that without smiling. You can't see our faces, but it's happening. And the second, we can actually see each other's faces today. We're in the same room together. We're doing social distancing. Everybody, don't worry about that. We're going to be here. We're slowly but surely getting back in the Rapsodo offices. And BP and I get to record today's podcast actually sitting next to each other versus being on a Zoom call.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And it's awesome being able to do that. It's been such a unique situation for the whole world, obviously. But yeah, being able to be in the same place to record a podcast, pretty cool. Baseball's back. The time of recording with Ari today, it's pretty exciting because we were able to talk with him on some projections. And that's pretty exciting stuff. And now that when this is coming out, we've had a few days of baseball. So hopefully all is going well. Man, it's just exciting to have the game back. And, you know, now that we do.
For sure. I think it amazed me. You know, I'm around my family, my wife, my kids, which I love dearly, but I had not been around other humans very much. And so just getting back into the office and putting some furniture together and getting everything there as we move into our new space, it's just kind of cool to be around the people that we see every day, but actually have that kind of interaction. I'm sure there's a lot of you out there that are kind of in the same boat that are doing that. But, you know, it's interesting times, but more so than ever, you know, you kind of already feel the buzz a little bit going on with MLB coming back. So we wanted to focus this week's podcast on a lot of the data revolution that's really gone on within the MLB over, I mean, geez, the last couple of decades, right, with Ari, but for us, the last couple of years. And I know you and I have talked about it quite a bit, and we've even shared some of the stories on here, but Ari brings a totally different sort of lens and view because he's been in the industry so long, and we get to kind of learn about that. And then also talk a little bit about what's coming and what he sees coming up next.
Yeah, and one of my favorite parts with being able to talk with Ari is kind of like Seth just mentioned, like what is the next steps? Because in analytics in baseball, it is such a broad thing that teams believe in different things. We'll be in spring training, we'll be with an affiliate, and we'll have discussions, and teams want to keep things to themselves a little bit, but they'll also open up about, you know, you collect this at Rapsodo, we value these type of metrics, and we hear that from different clubs. So I think that's always interesting. And, you know, to hear and have a conversation with Ari, who has done it with different organizations, kind of pioneered part of the programs, and still to hear, you know, similar things we experienced at Rapsodo that he did as well, and as building programs with just traditional baseball coaches and changes in the game and how fast paced it is. I think it's pretty unique to hear, you know, from a different perspective of someone that is such a big player in that and influencing the game.
For sure. We're going to get into it right now. We have a really long discussion, and I think just covered some great topics with Ari. But if you guys are interested in learning more about some of BP and I's experiences with going into MLB organizations, college organizations, and kind of hearing about what they do well, what we think could be done better, and things moving forward, just let us know. You can always reach out using the hashtag the Rapsodo Podcast. And you can reach out to us on all the social channels as well. So we're going to get into it. This is Ari Kaplan, and just appreciate you guys being here. All right, thanks for joining us. Excited to get going into some of these discussions and really excited to hear what you have to say on them too.
Hey, Seth, BP, great to be here.
Awesome. Well, one thing that BP and I always do a little bit of homework and research on people. One of the things BP saw right away was something that you actually tweeted out from Data Robot talking about this upcoming season.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of seeing that on Twitter, and obviously we follow you. I thought that was a pretty cool model. But yeah, talking about the MLB projections with the season getting underway and kind of where teams could fall and projected wins. So is there any teams that kind of based off those projections you think that listeners could look out for this year? And if you could give a little, you know, background on how those type of models get built, I think everybody would love to hear it.
Sure. Well, this year is going to be unique to say the least, having a 60 game season, hopefully.
Right.
You know, things are like really up in the air. It's like a sprint. So things might be played a little bit differently. You know, workload management is very different now. Having somebody pitch for 6 months is very different than a couple months. Long story short, Data Robot, we take as much information that we can. And for each individual player, we're talking multiple thousands of pieces of information. And then using historical activity, see, what happened to players in the past, similar players, how do they project forward based on things like age and position. And then constructing rosters of the teams from that. So yeah, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Braves, the Astros, Twins, Reds, those are forecast in this shortened 60 game season to be the winners. Now, what's really interesting is for each league is a three-way tie, for the wild cards. So the margin of error is extremely thin. For example, the Cubs missed by one game. So, these could all change very quickly, but it's going to be interesting. So other teams to look out for: Diamondbacks, Phillies, Mets, Nationals, Padres, in the National League, in the American League, Rangers, Rays, Red Sox, Angels, and Indians to look out for. So that's a lot of teams.
Sure.
Interesting, yeah, for the season and then the whole trade deadline, probably 2/3 of the teams are going to be in competition. So that'll be unprecedented as well.
Yeah, I like the word you use it as a sprint. And I've also done some reading that some pitchers may be handled a little differently. The rotations will be maybe a little different, where starters maybe see less rest. The using the relief pitchers may be differently than a normal situation with 60 games. So excited to see how that plays out as well.
Yeah, it's going to be thrilling from the analytic fan mindset. Since, the injuries, the workload, can you play consecutively? Also, the shortened spring training / summer camp, how are people ramping up as well? What have they been doing on the off season?
Yeah, agreed. I think it'll be one of those times too that in some of these respects, teams and front offices have probably wanted to kind of play around and even, do some experimentation with something like this. And this year will absolutely be that. It's definitely a time to kind of experiment and try new things.
Yeah, it'll be great. And, even before this, it's been more of an art than a science with a lot of teams just using their gut feel. 5 starting pitchers, period. That's the way it's always been done. Do we have a traditional closer role? Yes or no? What if somebody hasn't pitched in 7 games? It's just been gut feel. So even before the 60 game, very interesting how teams are getting more intelligent, measuring workload and making recommendations on that.
Yeah, and Ari, in thinking about teams that are open to change, one that comes to mind is the Rays, and with them experimenting with the opener. Is that something you think could be an advantage for a team like that in a shortened season?
Yeah, that's a fantastic observation. And one of the things I love about the Rays is they're innovative, and the use of the opener. Why do something since it's been done the last 100 years? Why have 5 starters? Maybe that's the right thing to do. Maybe it's not the right thing to do. I look at every situation is a little bit unique. So in some cases, what you've done for 100 years is great. Other cases, it's not. So that concept of an opener is something I've been a proponent of when I was with teams that made the playoffs. Since the opponent knows who your starter would be, they watch your video, they have pregame meetings. But if you switch it out last minute, or you have them mid-game switch, that's a competitive advantage. But then in terms of workload, maybe it's better to have it. It's something that you need to at least ask. And the Rays, had not the biggest attendance draw. So they had that also kind of political or, social flexibility, a little bit of a leash that they could change things. Now, technically, large market teams, the Dodgers, Cubs, Yankees, Red Sox, and so on, sometimes are hesitant since they're we're on the big stage, we have big stars, but they also, should be innovative in at least asking questions. Just since we're doing it, maybe it is, but how can we change? And, you know, of course, the Oakland A's Moneyball was another option. That was also largely in what can we do to better attract talent? So I love what the Rays are doing. I hope more teams keep asking more questions, trying different things.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a little bit of that adjust, like you just mentioned, this year, obviously, because it is a sprint, like you mentioned. But also we've got things like DH and the NL, which is a very, very big topic. Obviously, there's a lot of traditional fans and coaches, players that don't love that. But also with like facing a certain amount of batters, like with the three batters, maybe not as many like lefty specialists or righty specialists, submarine guys. So there's going to be a lot of philosophy that, like you mentioned, the word adjust, I think, is huge with this year's MLB. I think we'll learn a lot with what teams can adjust and find the best philosophies with that DH and the NL.
Yeah, Ari, I think that'd be really interesting to see simulations ran with Data Robot with teams, with them being able to use DH and with them not, and seeing what their expected win-loss schedule is going to be. Because I get, you know, some of them are going to be more versed that when they're building the team for this year, they weren't building thinking we're going to have a DH. Man, it's a good point. Possibilities and the ability to adjust is going to be endless this year.
Yeah,
it's exciting. And one thing I did want to add is Data Robot is not just a baseball analytics company. We work with every industry, banking, insurance, healthcare, public sector, fintech, and so on. But one fascinating thing is of all the huge companies we have, one of our Major League Baseball teams runs more predictions than any other, you know, like major bank in the world. That's our number one customer. They do multiple billions of predictions before every game and then use that to like defensively position, have a pitch by pitch roadmap. So I thought that's very cool.
I'm sure we have a few guesses on what teams this would be.
Yeah, I think I'm already privy to it, but we'll talk offline and give you three guesses. I'll let you know if he gets it right, Ari. Moving on, I think that one of the things that we wanted to get a chance to talk through is understand just your experience being there and literally helping build and develop the analytics department for the Cubs, and obviously having a hand in that with the Orioles and other teams that you've been a part of with that. I'm just fascinated by that, with what it was like. I can imagine and put myself in your shoes that it was a little bit like a kind of the Wild Wild West that, you know, you came in and some people hated it, some people loved it. I can imagine it's crazy. So we'd love to, if you can, just kind of dive into that. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what that process was like. And I'm really, really curious to see what the reactions were from other people within the organization as you came in and started implementing some of these, you know, really kind of cutting edge, you know, processes into place back then.
In the early years, it was you know, being able to even find play-by-play of games in the late 80s was a challenge. I was a student at Caltech, which is now known as a Big Bang Theory school. So I had to like go through microfilm in the library and recreate like the Dodgers' entire season by hand, make a database. But the key was everyone would say in their head, things like wins and losses and saves were not the best way to evaluate players. Or batting average wasn't perfect, didn't include walks. So people would get the complaint side, you know, this is not right. But what was lacking is coming up with new metrics to say, okay, what's better? So as a student at Caltech, I came up with my own metric. Whenever you hear the word expected, like expected earned run average or expected OPS was the paradigm I set. So people say that makes sense. And I was a student, just did this research, and it got some visibility. I was on the Today Show with Brian Gumbel and CNN and the LA Times, and Fred Clare, who was the GM of the Dodgers at the time, just saw me in the LA Times, and if you can imagine, looked me up and called me up in my dorm room. He said, I think what you're doing is helpful. It helped me better evaluate my talent, evaluate trades, you know, and could you come in the next couple of weeks? Long story short, I'm like, I will be there within the hour before you change your mind. So the point there was most of the teams were against any change. Just they were, in fact, against even having a meeting to see what they were against. You couldn't even tell them what you were doing. They were just against it. But what I loved about Fred Clare and the Dodgers was I had one team, and as long as we were doing something, it was almost better that nobody else knew or bought into it. So we would have an advantage signing, you know, players that might be overlooked. You know, the baseball generally stayed the same, you know, culturally. You know, there were only a handful of people, myself, Pete Palmer, Bill James, Eddie Epstein, probably missing a few, but yeah, most teams did not have something. Well, there's Moneyball, of course, which was, you know, on base is helpful. But in terms of actually measuring things in the game, Sport Vision, they're known for that yellow line in football for first down, came up with, you know, pitch effects. Where was the pitch in the zone? What was ball or strike? What was the spin of the pitch? Things like that. And I immediately realized this is going to change the game. So I started my own company with Fred Clear, actually. We were like, this is an awesome opportunity to give teams an advantage. Which players are bad at hitting against a curveball or a slider above and beyond what scouts might be able to detect? You know, one aside is I also have been, in addition to the analyst, the major league scout and minor league scout, helped, you know, with a lot of great signings. Kurt Schilling, helping the Orioles not release him, but he couldn't be their closer. They had Greg Olson, but, you know, eventually, you know, the year after helping convert him to a starter, he was almost released from the game. Hunter Pence helped the decision with the Astros to call him up from the minors. You know, just a Pedro Martinez, a lot of, you know, great names. But, you know, there are certain things that are quantifiable that, you know, myself as a scout or other great scouts would miss, since you're only looking at a handful of games. You're very good at seeing potentially mechanics for a limited number of games. Analytics can look at every play, every pitch, every swing, and find trends over time.
I'm curious. I don't mean to kind of cut you off in the middle of the flow, but I'm just really curious when you go back to that time, because really where we made our bread and butter inside of MLB, especially at the beginning when we broke in, is in player development, is in actually taking the data and how, like, very small changes in a pitcher's release, grip, spin axis, you know, the tilt of the ball, and trying to make that pitch better from pitch design. When I hear you talk, it sounds like so much of the earlier days of analytics were all built around player evaluation, kind of scouting, putting value to a player, and a little bit more like after the fact, but not actually necessarily put into play with, like, hey, here's how to make this player better. Is that true? Would you kind of agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, I completely agree in that these were tools for measuring what happened in the past. And you still need, either on the data science side, people to help tease out what's important, what's actionable, and then people with domain expertise. So these could be former players, it could be the coaches, could be in some cases the players themselves. Like I worked with CJ Wilson, converting him from a reliever to a starter, and he was like all self-motivated. I worked with Kerry Wood later in his career. He was very self-motivated to take the information. But if you don't have someone like that, it's just looking at facts of what happened in the past. And you have to put that in context of reality. Like, was the game, you know, was somebody trying to change their mechanics and just learning? Was it a situation that they were just kind of having fun? The game was already lost. So you want to understand the context. And so absolutely there's a lot of that lacking. And there still is, to be honest. So if applied correctly, or it could be extremely helpful for that player development aspect.
I think that's a really good point, Ari. And something, a question that I had. So like you'd made mention before, that baseball is a traditional game. So there was, as things are starting to evolve and there's things like these analytics being brought to the table, like the expected, like you mentioned with like your metrics. But there is a lot of people in baseball, players, coaches, that are so traditional that don't want to adapt to any change at all. I mean, we've even seen this with Rapsodo, with getting, you know, the spin rate data and the ball path data in the hands of college, high school coaches. We see how traditional the game is. Anyway, the question I was kind of getting at is, so you obviously built the program and analytics with the Cubs. It was so impressive. But in the organization, what was the feedback like from the players, the coaches, Was there, you know, a little bit of hesitant, or was it a little bit more well expected, well taken, as they kind of saw what you built and what it could do for the team?
Yeah, it was an interesting time period for the organization. I was brought in by the owner, Tom Ricketts. He had purchased the team earlier, but it still was about 2010. So there's still a few years of, sport vision. So it was already to the point where some of that was known. Probably 10 of the 30 teams are already going there. So from the ownership side, top down, there was that, he went to University of Chicago. So kind of that intelligent, data-driven decisions. But also he didn't want to just come in and say change for the sake of change. So it was like that interesting pivot point in the history of the organization. Some people, totally against. You couldn't even have a meeting to discuss what it is. Kerry Wood, Ryan Dempster were some of the players that were really into it. And then in the player development, Seth, you were talking about, looking at minor leaguers, high school, college, like Brian LaHare, a player people don't quite remember, but long story short, he became an all-star in just the first couple of months of him being called up. He was raking it in the minors, doing very well, and the fans were pleading, call him up. You guys are idiots. Why aren't you calling him up? But the data was showing he was very successful in the minors since the pitchers were all pitching him to his strengths. And he did have some weaknesses that we needed a couple of weeks for him to work on. And we did, and he got called. We helped him make those adjustments. So when he did get called up, did really well in the first couple of months and made the All-Star team. So, having to what BP and Seth here are saying is individualized plans for the players was, I think, one success that we did with the Cubs. It wasn't just, players in general don't hit curves as well as fastballs. So, throw more curves. It was for each individual person. What are your strengths, weaknesses, habits? How can you adjust? And then the other thing that, we're talking about players adjusting noise. They are human beings. So just to say, adjust your grip, you need to throw a cutter this way. It could still take weeks or months, even if you have a plan, for people to develop, repeat it, make all the adjustments, repeat it when their runners are on base, and you have to shorten your delivery. So it's a combination of finding what needs improvement and acting on it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Even, so many of the guys now are kind of like, come up in the game with the analytics. So it's not as foreign to them. They understand it. Most of them, I would say most of them train with it. A lot of them have their own when you're just talking about Rapsodo in general. But I know BP and I have been, at MLB organizations and spring training camps and in different places. And there's still guys that will like refuse to get on a machine, and, they think the data is going to be used against them or, something around that. And it's fewer, way fewer than what it was when we first started going around to camps and do that. But there's still the guys that'll pop up, those ones that we're not going to mention names or organizations, but they'll be out there and they won't throw if they have data on them and that sort of thing. And, I think it's so interesting. And then those same guys are the ones who are like trying to get better and look at it, and then would probably like and benefit from the data if they kind of knew what it was and how to use it. So it's a cool shift that we're starting to see with more and more of even the players themselves knowing what they're looking for and relying less on a coach to do that. And I don't mean that to take anything away from a coach, but just say that it's there's something powerful about coming in and knowing what your data should be for you to think that you have the best pitch possible. Now, a coach or a front office guy can come around and tell you that they think they should be, 10 degrees more tilted that way to grade this and explain why. I think there's value in that too, and that's why the real-time feedback's there. But I think there's something to it that all these kids that are growing up nowadays, when they reach an MLB team, if they don't have this sort of thing, there's going to be this, what, where is this? Where's the technology that you're sort of accustomed to and used to using?
Exactly. If you have a choice and you, you know, you're you know, young player or other, do you want to see like a high definition of your grip and the movement of the pitch, or do you not want to see it?
Yeah.
Pretty clear. Yeah. You're going to want to see it.
Yeah, and I, to like with Seth's point, it is awesome to see as well, like at Rapsodo. So if there is maybe a coach we've discussed Rapsodo with, if they're MLB, if they're with college, that maybe is more traditional, like I mentioned, that's no, I've taught this way and I have this many World Series rings, or I have this many, you know, players in the Cy Young, whatever it is, right? That they know they can teach well based off of their mechanic teachings or their experience. But it is really cool when maybe they do see the Rapsodo data, they're exposed to it a few times, or, you know, the in-game data. And then when you see them transition to becoming on board, we've obviously seen those cases as well too. And that's always awesome to see.
Yeah, it's great to see. And it sounds like you, you know, have the same spectrum of experiences, the extreme negativity to doubt to positivity, and stories I probably can't or shouldn't give on podcast, but yeah. I've seen it all, I think, but you know, the people that want to improve, this is fundamental. It's incredible. You know, there's an article I'd like to say on from The Athletic or somewhere today on what the Cincinnati Reds are doing, and now that, you know, they're showing success, not everyone, but, you know, some players are, you know, saying this is going to help me prolong my career, help me make the majors. Help me avoid injuries, help me be more competitive, help me win, help me have more fun. You know, I want to go, you know, record myself or watch myself trying a different grip and seeing how does that affect the movement. You know, every step of my delivery, you know, are there different ways that I can improve or vary it up or be looser? That's what we love seeing. And then there's a great book, Big Data Baseball, about the Pirates, of just defensive shifting, positioning, you know, where we think the ball will go. And even there, even if, you know, Clint Hurdle, the manager directing it, players still resisted and had mutinies a couple times before it finally happened.
Yeah, right. With the shift, that's interesting. It's watching the games as we all follow. It'll be interesting when you do have a shift on a guy and you see it get beaten. And obviously, the models show us that the shift is there for a reason. It works more than it doesn't. And then you see the pitcher's reaction. It's like, well, if the third baseman would have been there, that's an out. But how many times did that save you with that guy being in shallow, you know, outfield and right field that caught a ball that would be a single all day?
Yeah, and I've been in that challenge. But yeah, with the Cubs, they when I was there, bought into you know shifts, you know, based on numbers, especially when other teams were not really doing it, you could get a huge advantage. So I remember working with Darwin Barney, who won the Gold Glove that year. You know, great player. When the ball got to him, he almost never made a mistake or an outright error. But you know, being in the right place, you know, gained one or two steps, and that made a lot of difference, and that translated to, you know, tens of runs being saved, which resulted in multiple wins. You know, in some seasons, that's, especially this season, the difference of the playoffs or not.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know we definitely want to get into kind of some of your thoughts on future, like, you know, what's the next landscape inside of this analytics sort of revolution that's gone on, you know, here for the last couple of decades, and even more so kind of highlighted and blown up here in the last couple of years. But one of the things, you know, we've, very, very short amount of period of time that we've been dealing with MLB organizations, especially compared to your history. And for us, you know, I think back to the first meetings I had with teams, and I'm explaining, you know, honestly, like what spin direction is, and, you know, very, very simple metrics that they would bring in entire organizations just to like hear us talk on what the data was and how to use it and how to interpret it. The front office guys knew it, but really none of the baseball ops guys did. So you'd have coordinators and coaches, and that's such a seismic shift over that, that now we don't, one, we work with all the teams and have already had those meetings, so we don't have to go back and do them as much. But even the guys, you know, I was on a Zoom call with an organization and a lot of their pitching coordinators, what, maybe like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And guys that I know and I remember talking to before that were either negative and, you know, looked at, we're a relatively young crew anyways. And like, what's this kid know that I don't know, like literally came out of his mouth before when we were talking, that sort of thing. And the shift in the questions they were starting to ask and look to get answered were all of a sudden what I would consider like way, like phase two or three, that we weren't even like there yet. That's just like, you know, next iterations of products and future things are like, oh, we can start answering that once we know this and how we can measure that. And it was questions coming from a group of guys that have been in the game, probably every one of them at least 30 years, that have been coaching and been involved with it, you know, probably longer than I've been born. And it's just, it's incredible to see the shift in these guys. That it's really an adapt or die sort of thing. And that's, I guess, everything in life, but especially in baseball, they've kind of taken that, you know, to the heart that either new people are coming in to replace you or you get on board and you kind of understand it and learn it and do it. And so many of them are doing a good job and other ones that are not are probably going to find their way out of the game, which is just kind of interesting. I'm curious what that's looked like for you, especially leading into the sports management worldwide, that I'm assuming a lot of those guys are coming to you and trying to get trained so they can kind of stay around in the game.
So I guess one of my more famous students was Mike Matheny, who was manager of the Cardinals. And one of the critiques that the media and, you know, his reputation was he was not as analytically inclined. So what I love about him is he was reflective enough to say, I want to improve in that area. I want to get a job managing again. Hopefully everyone listening knows he's the newer manager of the Royals, but I thought that was really cool. You know, at first, he was anonymous in the class, which is fine, but then he's like, no, I'm going to wear this, whether you call it a shortcoming or this area to improve, a badge of honor. And he did, and he was humble and, one of the intangibles is like leadership. So, you know, there is something to be said for coaches to, know when and how and psychologically to interact with players. So like I've been a shoulder to cry on, someone to just have fun with, to drink with. And there is something to be said about that. But, you know, now after Mike Matheny came on board, you know, I've had former GMs, I've had, scouting directors, minor league people. I've had current players in the majors taking the class, all since they wanted, understand, how can this be leveraged? You know, what's the terminology used? So I think that's really cool. And that'll help the whole industry the more we can educate those folks.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome, Ari. And I think that from our listening base that we definitely have some people interested. We get people to reach out through Apsodo that have questions about how they can get started in the analytics. How can they move up to an MLB team? Or maybe they're doing it like a college. We're seeing more and more colleges that have like labs, pitching labs, right? So I think it'd be really valuable if you wouldn't mind just sharing maybe some of the main topics that your courses teach and cover, because I do think there would definitely be some of our listeners that'd be interested in that exact type of teaching you offer.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, the highlight of it is when Seth comes in and guest lectures.
Absolutely.
Hopefully I didn't bore people too badly when I came on. Yeah.
Great feedback. Yeah, high level. The topics are, how are analytics and information used in baseball? Then I talk about like the hot like three or four technical topics. So that's like R, Python, SQL. These are skills. If you want a job in the baseball operations, at least on the analytics side, helpful to have. Not every job requires it, but so where I'm not giving like a in-depth roll up your sleeves, I give an overview, give you the scripts. You could look over my shoulder. I think the other benefit is since I've been in the front office and then my role with Data Robot, working with a lot of Major League Baseball and Premier League Soccer, NBA, NHL teams, still very relevant. What are the hot data science topics now? And not just to get a job, but to be better than most other people, to be on that cutting edge, which to me is like the data science, looking at information and finding what pieces are actionable, what's more important than something else, the Rapsodo type of information. If you combine that with a scouting report and combine that with injury history and combine that with, you know, anything else a team collects, which elements work in combination? What are the nuances? So those are kind of some of the topics in the class. How do you do a projection? How do you do what's called linear regression? If you have any one of these things I mentioned on your resume as you apply for a job, you're going to stand out. And if you're already in the industry, you know, these are very valuable things to know and learn to equalize, if not get ahead. And taking the competition out, it's just really important to go from just having raw pieces of information to having actionable insights on that whether it's player development, scouting, operations, finding trades, predicting injuries, seeing how you can perform at peak performance, workload management. These are all things we talk about in the class.
Yeah, that's awesome. You mentioned Matheny as one of an example of that. And I think it's kind of a funny story too. Before you and I had even met, and we kind of our paths crossed both with Data Robot and then eventually Sports Management Worldwide, we obviously work really closely with all the teams, but specifically have a great relationship with the Royals. And when he came on board, we had kind of heard stories that, you know, he had a little bit more of like a new invigoration for the analytics and wanted to get that. And we saw it in a huge way. I mean, it definitely took from the classroom, came into that the communication that we had, getting everything on board and working with their team in a much closer manner. So, I mean, it's taken from the classroom into that and put into practice. And it was awesome. Once I heard the story and then kind of understood, I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense. And we got to see that kind of on the other side of the coin. But one last thing you mentioned, too, is on the insights into everything. I definitely wanted to give a little bit of time and dedication to Data Robot as well, and specifically talk about the insights. You know, we're using it from a company standpoint, and, you know, the way that we're able to take not only, you know, just our data, because we take in millions and millions of hits and pitches each year and are able to gain insights off of that then we can pass back to the players. But it's also something that we can use on from a visual standpoint to help sort of train our models and train our system to do that. So huge impact on our side. My guess is a lot of listeners don't know about it. And I know that it's obviously used in a bunch of different industries. So you're more than welcome to kind of give your, you know, the spiel on what Data Robot is and what that, you know, how you got on board with that too, I think would be interesting.
Let me just start with outside of Data Robot, data science, machine learning, artificial intelligence is extremely helpful, since before those things existed, what we were talking about earlier, you're just describing what happened in the past. So where artificial intelligence comes into play is better predicting something that might happen in the future, or better like classifying, you know, this pitcher's high injury risk, or this high school player has a higher likelihood of making an impact in the majors. So figuring out the nuances of how, and the complexities, different sources of data connect with each other that might be harder and possible for a human to detect is where the value is. And Data Robot is a company. We're the leading enterprise artificial intelligence platform. So it's something that the teams themselves or the colleges themselves use to help accelerate coming up with artificial intelligence insights extremely quickly and easily. Like I could do a demo in 8 to 10 minutes that takes an Excel spreadsheet and immediately could tell, you know, let's predict the attendance, or let's look at scouting reports and see what keywords are most predictive for them getting drafted. So that's the value. And Data Robot, yeah, it's a platform the companies use. The companies use their own data, and we created what's called automated machine learning, where all the boring, repetitive, mundane tasks that a programmer or a data scientist would do, that would take, like when I was with the Cubs, it could take me 2 or 3 months to do. It's automated and it's done in a matter of minutes. So that frees, it accelerates these insights. It frees me as a technologist to more answering the questions, working with the coaches, players, coming up with creativity, poking holes in my arguments. That's where Data Robot comes into play. It automates the mundane parts. And then the last part is, data, it's called drifty. Things change. The strategy of your opponents change. This year, there's only going to be 60 games, hopefully. you know, how are things changing? How's the marketplace for lefty relievers changing? And that's where Data Robot helps you identify, like, what are the subtle changes? So that drift in data and drift in modeling is like another part of Data Robot that helps out. So again, it's the teams using Data Robot to using their own data to answer their own questions.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I mean, it does. There's just so many applications that it's going to continue to go. And, you know, I even think back to, I know that we had this discussion, it may have been with another person with Data Robot, but just the idea of people working from home and what companies can expect from a, you know, what type of work they're going to be able to do, what sort of production they're going to be able to get out of it. I mean, simple things like that, that all of a sudden being able to run predictions on what the company is going to look like as every week, day, month, it seems like things are changing around you. It's important to be able to run those and try to have that prediction as accurate as possible. So yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, and that's one of the challenges with data science is, or with anything, the world's changed. Forecasting, we work with Kroger, one of the biggest retailers. How does retail affect? You close the store, you open the store. Your predictions of the future may not be as accurate. They may be completely useless, or they may be somewhere in between. But being able to come up with these insights of what's changed and has the thing that changed, is that important that it changed or not? But being able to run it, billions of times, where in the past it could have taken weeks or months to come up with, just helps you in any industry adjust better. And in terms of sports, where, we're going to have to adjust very quickly. And then next year and 2 years and 3 years from now, when you're projecting player performance, you're going to have this 60-game season, adjusted for, calibrated effectively. That's where automation and data science can help out. Predicting things where, kind of like there's an earthquake or the rug pulled out, how do you predict things when there's a couple big blips in there?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I don't think we can kind of make it any more concise than that. That's kind of where it is and what it looks like. I know that we'll all be watching, and I'm sure we'll be kind of communicating back and forth as we see what the season's going to kick off to be. And games are right around the corner, so we'll see how everything happens. And just hope everybody stays safe and we get that going. But excited to have baseball back and excited for this conversation. Really appreciate it. Appreciate what you're doing in the industry. And I know that you guys talk about a lot of Rapsodo data and sports management worldwide, and that's appreciated. And everybody that gets to go through those classes, they're pretty fortunate to be able to get to learn from you, and we appreciate you spending some time with us.
Oh, it's been great being here. I'm excited about the season. I'm excited Rapsodo, even when the season was on pause, you have KBO and high school, college, and things happening that you're still plugging away and making a big impact regardless of what's going on in the world.
That was great stuff with Ari. We appreciate him coming on, and obviously we expect to probably have him back on as we continue to discuss things that are happening with the shortened season. But, we're going to get into the wrap-up now. Something that BP and I actually use quite a bit, so this is something that will come pretty easily to this section of the wrap-up. We're actually going to talk about the golf side of Rapsodo for a minute and highlight the Rapsodo MLM, or Mobile Launch Monitor.
Yeah, it's definitely something to check out. We know that a lot of you baseball coaches, players, do golf as well. They go hand in hand very well. So there's, launch monitors that you can get your analytics on spin rate and velocity and ball path. But the Rapsodo teams put together a unit just comes from the phone. We've actually had quite a bit of MLB college players get their own unit as well, in those off days playing, working on the irons. I know it's like Seth mentioned, it's helped us dial in those irons. So it's something definitely to check out on the Rapsodo golf side.
For sure. Consumer product. So it's made for personal use, not necessarily, schools and organizations like the Rapsodo products are on the Diamond Sports side of things. But honestly, I have a brother who's a golf pro and has done that for many years. And I get to share with him my swings, and he gets to kind of help me remotely and kind of do that. Not everybody has access to a brother that's a golf pro, but just being able to see what your clubs do, understand your bag, understand what it looks like. So when you go out on the course from the range, you're going to understand, okay, this is 130. I know that club. I got it dialed in. And it also has really cool videos that come with it too, with shot tracers and all that. So it's kind of fun. We get to rag on each other when we when we get to see the shots inside the company that are not great, but also put up the best ones of the week. So it's a cool product. We love it. We appreciate you know, everybody that has one that's out there from a listener standpoint, and also encourage you guys to go out there and pick one up yourself.
I just want to say thanks again to all the listeners out there. It's an awesome show today with Ari jumping on to talk some analytics. Again, just make sure to give us a follow, download the podcast, give it a share. We really appreciate spreading the word of the Rapsodo Baseball Podcast, and we'll look forward to getting out next week.
Booyah!